Information you need to take your marriage, family, and personal life to the next level.
Weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest in this hour has been a guest on Church and Culture before. Dr. David Prentice is a developmental and cell biologist. He's working at the Charlotte Lozier Institute in Washington. That's part of the Susan B. Anthony list. He's a vice president and research director. He also serves as an adjunct professor at Catholic University and the John Paul II Institute in Washington. Advisory board member for the Midwest Stem Cell Therapy Center in Kansas. And he's spent 20 years as a professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. And he's a Texas Longhorn, having been a faculty member at the University of Texas Medical School at Houston. David, welcome back to Church and Culture.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
Now, we have this incredible story that's been unfolding for the past few months about what Planned Parenthood is doing to aborted babies. And you recently, and this is just the latest thing you've done because you've written and spoken a lot about this issue, but you recently gave testimony, I believe, in the Wisconsin legislature for a Senate committee about a bill that is pending there that I'm assuming would put an end to this kind of use of aborted babies in the state of Wisconsin. Is that correct?
That's correct. What it would do would be to prohibit harvesting and trafficking of these fetal tissues from induced abortion.
And, of course, there's legislation now in the United States Congress that is written to do the same thing. And so I think it'd be helpful for us to go through your testimony here. I've read it. I think it's so clear. I want to congratulate you for making scientific matters clear to the liberally educated and artistically inclined like myself. So I want to underscore what is your first line from your testimony, and I'll read and I ask you to explain it. You said in your very first sentence, there is no sound scientific reason for the continued trafficking of fetal tissue organs and body parts. That's a pretty across the board statement. Would most scientists or all scientists agree with you on this?
Well, certainly not all scientists. There's a certain amount of pushback, but it's actually, I'd say, a majority of scientists would agree. And,
really?
And I know we'll go through and we'll unpack this some more, but, you know, let's look at what are the reasons that people give that they need to continue research with fetal tissue. And one of the things that quickly pops up is, well, we're going to treat and cure all sorts of diseases. In fact, I think we need to mention that the consent forms used at least some of the Planned Parenthood clinics who traffic in these aborted baby parts start with the phrase that says, aborted fetal tissue has been used to treat and find a cure for diabetes, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, AIDS, and cancer.
Well, your testimony completely refutes that.
Well, it's a pretty easy refutation, though, Deal, because we obviously haven't cured just that small handful of diseases. What progress we have made in terms of treatment has not come at all from fetal tissue. It's come from things like adult stem cells, umbilical cord blood stem cells, and other things. And we can come back and talk about those successful and ethical alternatives. But your listeners ought to think about if if they were a woman in this vulnerable position, very unsettled, she's come in and she said, yeah, I think I need to go through this procedure, for whatever her reason might be. And then she's presented with this consent form that describes all of the glorious things that will happen and the life-saving research done. That obviously is not informed consent.
Your testimony would suggest not just uninformed, it's a lie. It's a misrepresentation.
It's a bald-faced lie.
Yeah.
No, it borders on not just unethical, it borders on illegal in terms of what the federal statutes talk about in terms of informed consent. So, but the transplants, they're talking about fetal tissue transplants. Now, there's a long history of fetal tissue transplant attempts.
Yeah, and you footnote that and show that it's none of them have been effective.
No, and in fact, the National Institutes of Health here in the U.S. won't even fund transplants with fetal tissue anymore. They haven't for years.
And by the way, I think that's one of the most powerful things in your testimony is the fact that the NIH agrees with you. I mean, you're getting your data from them.
I'm taking it straight from their published material. But in 2001, the results of one of these fetal tissue transplant trials for Parkinson's disease made the front page of the New York Times. The doctors themselves describing the horrific results where the patients weren't better. And in fact, the doctors themselves were talking about the patients writhing, wriggling uncontrollably, unable to control their shaking. I mean, you'd see the ashen faces of the doctors realizing that these patients were worse.
Well, is this tissue that is being sold by Planned Parenthood, if it's not being used, where is it going?
Well, it's not being used for transplants now. So the other thing that you'll hear mentioned are vaccines. And there's a tiny, tiny little raisin in a great big pudding there that's true about that. And that's the fact that back in the 1950s and 1960s, poliovirus and some other viruses were grown in fetal tissue and fetal cell lines because other than cancer cells, that was the only thing we knew how to grow in the lab. Well, that was the golden age for fetal tissue because they don't use fetal tissue to make polio vaccines.
Well, that was the option, then. We have other options now, right?
Well, there are a tremendous number of options now. There are modern, progressive options now, and they are better, let alone ethical. They're simply medically better. So what's the tissue used for? It's used for basic research in laboratories. And, in fact, it's used for, some of your listeners might hear the phrase, the humanized mouse. Now, before you start to think about Mickey Mouse and Minnie, what they're talking about is they take a mouse that has had its immune system crippled, and they implant human tissue to make a human immune system within this mouse. Now, there's an advantage to doing that. You can test how a human immune system would react to various infectious diseases or even viruses or vaccines and so on. But the truth is you don't have to use fetal tissue for that. You can use umbilical cord blood stem cells. You can use adult bone marrow stem cells. The people who developed the whole humanized mouse model have shown published scientific evidence that these are as good as or better than using fetal tissue.
Well, then, I guess the sort of money question is, why is there demand for fetal tissue if it's been shown not to work as well or not at all as other options?
You know, and for what demand there is, and we'll touch on how much demand there is in a minute, but for that demand, what I'm seeing is you've got some scientists who are stuck on an outmoded antiquated scientific technique.
That's how you end your testimony, as a matter of fact.
Well, but they are. I mean, I'm a bench scientist. What you do is you use something you know that works, or maybe you've got some cells in the freezer, or it's your favorite technique, and a lot of times you won't look for something better, newer, because you're just doing the same thing. But there are some people, some scientists, who are stuck on this antiquated science. It's not that there aren't alternatives. It's not that there aren't even better ways to do the science. They are stuck in an antiquated scientific mode.
And I would assume this is not cost effective within the companies they're working for, the research companies.
I really don't know. I mean, it's hard because there isn't transparency here to know how much they might actually be paying for this fetal tissue. We've seen the haggling over the cost of a baby's kidney or liver or whatever in the videos, and it might seem like a small amount of money. They talk about $30 to $70 or maybe a couple hundred dollars if you, as they said, use a line item for different parts and so on, or even an intact unborn child that now is parted out. But there are also these middlemen. Some call them tissue procurement agencies. We saw a couple of examples, Stem Express and Advanced Bioscience Research, where they pay that small amount to Planned Parenthood. And it's questionable as to whether that's just an expense or actually beyond the expense. Whole legal question there. But then these procurement tissue people may do something that enhances the price. We were able to get a copy of the Stem Express catalog. And
so that must have been gruesome.
It's clinical. They will talk about the product that they are getting, but, you know, fetal liver stem cells. And one of the first videos talked about the demand for fetal liver. But they take those livers from, again, aborted children. They process that to harvest and cull out the fetal liver stem cells, and then they will sell those not for $100, but for thousands of dollars. Now, somebody's making a big profit right there.
But you're saying that there is really no medical or scientific reason. Therapeutic is the word they always use. There's no therapeutic reason, meaning medically beneficial reason, for this to be done.
Now, there's nothing therapeutic being done with fetal tissue from abortion.
Period.
You know, and in terms of, you know, utility and so on. So here's another example. In that Stem Express catalog, there's a chapter on fetal liver stem cells. Now, why are they after fetal liver, and why is there such a demand? Well, at that point in your life, in the womb, between about 8 to 24 weeks after conception, you don't have bone marrow. You have liver. And your immune cells and your blood cells are all made in the liver. And then once the bones are formed and there's a space there, they migrate over to the bone marrow. Well, there's this chapter, and it talks about fetal liver stem cells in the Stem Express catalog, and there are different designations. You can subdivide those stem cells into different types based on certain markers or activities they have. The next chapter in their catalog is adult bone marrow stem cells, and there are the same subtypes there.
So, and we call those adult stem cells, and according to your testimony, these have been proven to be of therapeutic benefit, and in complete contrast to the results from fetal stem cells.
Right. Over 1.25 million people around the world now treated with adult stem cells for dozens of conditions. Hundreds of published medical papers validating the safety as well as the efficacy of adult stem cells. And I include even umbilical cord blood stem cells because you're taking these after the person's born. They have similar characteristics. They're better in some respects because they're not yet exposed to different infections that we get throughout our lives. So you can get a better match sometimes when you transplant people. But tens of thousands of people transplanted just with umbilical cord blood stem cells. These are the gold standard when it comes to treating patients.
I guess the question that probably our listeners have is, how does Planned Parenthood get away with, A, making these claims to the general public to justify the dismemberment and the cutting up and the sale of aborted children? And B, how do they get away with misrepresenting themselves to their patients who sign these consent forms to have their children, aborted children, carved into little pieces and sold? How do they get away with it?
Yeah, I think one of the things is there hasn't been transparency before. Right? Deal, we've done polling recently where half of Americans don't even realize Planned Parenthood does abortions, let alone traffics
right.
these body parts.
3%, they say, right?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
But, you know, people think about Planned Parenthood and they think about women's health issues. Now, we've got a whole separate set of studies that show there are, again, comprehensive centers doing women's health care and more, and actually doing mammograms, whereas Planned Parenthood doesn't even own a mammogram in any of their clinics.
Even though they claimed they did mammograms?
Well, Cecile Richards admitted last week in her testimony
right.
that not one clinic, Planned Parenthood clinic, has a mammogram machine.
So, which is what their apologists have been running around saying they do.
Right. But people think about women's health care and they think about those misrepresentations that have been put out there, and people haven't heard the facts and heard the truth and been exposed to real transparency, which is what we're trying to do. We're trying to share.
Do you think
there are alternatives?
Talking with Dr. David Prentice from the Charlotte Lozier Institute in Washington, D.C., part of the Susan B. Anthony list, do you think that the kind of data that you put forth, I mean, it's so convincing, it's so scientifically presented and laid out, and it's so rock solid, in my opinion. Have you witnessed anybody who was, I say, an apologist for Planned Parenthood or supporting Planned Parenthood being convinced by your or some colleague's presentation like this?
We've seen, I don't know, sea changes, but we've seen sort of the melting of some glaciers begin. I was on a panel debating this issue actually just about a week ago, and I brought up the mention of simply the consent form that we've already discussed.
Right.
And the rest of the panel will just say we're not conservative by any stretch of the imagination. Nonetheless, the scientists and the bioethicists on that panel agreed with me.
Wow.
That it was a misrepresentation. And even a couple of the other panel members were going, yeah, that's not right. They shouldn't be saying that. You know, so you're starting.
That's to very good news. That's
and,
very
and
good
the,
news.
The light start to come on, but it's still a big task. There's still a lot to do just to educate people about the real facts.
Now, have you done this before the U.S. Congress yet?
I haven't testified on this issue before the U.S. Congress yet.
But I know you've been over there on other issues. And do you think the legislation coming down or in process there will give you or someone like you an opportunity to present this dead end of fetal stem cell research? You think that's going to happen?
I do think it'll happen. There are obviously more congressional hearings. There are three different committees in the House looking at this. They have just formed or are getting ready to form a select committee to really drill down on this and sort of coalesce. And one of the issues they will be looking at is this whole falsehood or set of falsehoods about fetal tissue. So my hope is they will take this information to heart, maybe even bring some people in to present the real facts, because they need to hear it, the American people need to hear it.
I watched some of the testimony of Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood. They didn't get into the science at all, did they?
No, it hasn't really been part of the questioning yet in terms of these hearings. They've been looking at other facets of the whole problem with Planned Parenthood, the legal issues and some of the other things. And, you know, they will get to this whole fetal tissue thing. Remember that this is only part of the problem, too. It's a lever to kind of pry the lid off this can of, it's not just worms, it's more insidious and gory than that. But this whole industry, this death-dealing industry, and then putting on top of that the parting out, the vivisection of these young children. Let's talk about just that. You know, one of the things they really haven't gone into is opening people's eyes to what goes on in that clinic in terms of that procedure.
And you make the point that it's been, science has shown that babies at a certain point feel pain.
Yes.
Could you gloss that a little bit? Because
sure.
I've done some poking around on that issue, and I know there's scientific disagreement. Of course, it's the finding that made the 20-week bill, the one that I think is called the Pain-Capable Act, possible.
Yep.
That protects children after they're 20 weeks in the room. Given the disagreement that I've read about, I mean, is this disagreement that's just been spawned by ideological differences, or is there any ambiguity about the research involved scientifically about this pain issue?
I think it's interpretation of the results, largely driven by ideology. So, but let's look at, so what do the published studies say? The published studies say that perhaps as early as 8 weeks, certainly by 16 to 20 weeks, the various nerve tracts have been formed. They connect up to the spinal cord. They connect to the rudimentary parts of the brain that have been formed even at that point. They can carry nerve impulses and responses, in fact. You can see reactions to various stimuli. You know, if I started to come at you with a knife, you would probably back away. Well, you see that same thing going on in the womb with these very early...
The child actually backs away.
Yes. Yeah, it's an avoidance reaction. Or if you were pricked, you would withdraw quickly. You would jerk. You see that reaction. You see even without that physical impinging on you, you see these young individuals produce what are called stress responses, various hormonal responses. You know, we have that as well.
Now, how could this be interpreted another way, David?
Well, it can't be. The difference in interpretation comes down to this. There are some members of the scientific community that maintain that you need the higher cortical functions, the higher brain functions, not just to perceive, but to respond to pain. It's actually interesting that even those naysayers about this early fetal pain response agree that the physiology and the morphology, the nerve tracts are all there, that you can see these responses and so on, and that even these young individuals can perhaps perceive pain. Where they draw the line and make the distinction is that they believe it's not just perception, that you need this higher brain function to interpret it as pain.
What difference does that make? I want to come back to that point. It's so quote-unquote Jesuitical. I don't mean that in a bad way. But I'm with Dr. David Prentice, Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. We're going to talk more about the scientific findings regarding pain for children in the womb past 20 weeks and more about the horrendous trafficking in body parts done by Planned Parenthood right after this short message.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, the sacramental liturgical worldview of Eastern Christianity can help the world understand one of the most controversial teachings of the Church in modern times. The author of a new book will help us understand how.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Each of us has been given our life by God Himself. Along with that life comes the dignity of the human person. And as members of Christ's body, the Church, we really need to know that the Church's special interest is every single human person. That's the topic of the next Christ is the Answer program. Father Ricardo's title is simply The Inviolable Dignity of the Human Person. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 6, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
All over the world, jihadis chant death to America. Some American Muslims want Sharia law here.
I prefer Sharia law.
And the Sharia law is for the whole world.
One topic during our October 17th conference, Cultural Madness and Catholic Sanity, examines how the news keeps us dumb about jihadism. I'll even show the chilling footage of Muslim youth training and performing jihad. Join hundreds of disciples on October 17th. You won't be disappointed. For more, AveMariaRadio.net.
I'm back with Dr. David Prentice, who is the Vice President and Director of Research at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. We were talking about the studies that have shown that children in the womb past 20 weeks have nervous systems developed enough that they feel pain. And, David, you were describing the quote-unquote interpretations of those who deny the grounds of the Pain-Capable Child Protection Act, which is based upon this research. They argue that brain development hasn't gotten to the point where a child can interpret this as pain. Is that the argument?
Their argument is that it's not a matter of perception. It's not even a matter of response. in terms of, they would say, a reflex action, that you have to be able to interpret this as pain, which means you have to have higher brain functions. Now, there,
I mean, when you kick your dog will yelp.
Right.
Now, is your dog interpreting that as pain? If your dog, even if your dog is not interpreting that as pain, you know your dog felt pain.
That's right.
I mean, you know he did because he yelled, right?
Right.
So why does a child need to interpret something as pain when you see them jerking back from these, whatever these medical interventions are?
So there's other evidence then that, again, blows their argument out of the water and leaves them essentially with an ideological fig leaf. And that's, for example, some individuals are born without the higher part of the brain. They lack that cortex, but they're alive, they're functioning, and yes, they respond and they obviously feel pain. You know that they're feeling pain, just like if you were
Interpretation, David. I can't believe that anybody would make that with a straight face.
But it does come back to ideology. The research that's usually quoted by those who dispute that unborn children feel pain primarily comes from a Journal of the American Medical study back in 2005. There are, let's just say, some conflicts of interest even among those authors, where they are not disputing that there are the physical perceptions of pain, but again, saying that you need this higher function to interpret it. Most of the authors had some association with the abortion industry. Now, that would seem to be a clear conflict of interest, but it's very clear from the science, and in fact undisputed even by the opponents of these pain capable bills, that these young individuals can feel pain. But it's a matter of interpretation is what they're saying. Another thing in terms of, yes, you just know that they're feeling pain. They're doing fetal surgeries now for little individuals still in the womb. Your listeners probably have seen that famous picture of the little hand grabbing the doctor's finger.
Right.
I mean, out of the womb. Little Samuel Armas his surgery was at about 20 weeks. They're doing them at 20 weeks and earlier. Those doctors routinely give the unborn child direct anesthesia and pain medication. It's not just the anesthesia of mom that anesthetizes the baby. They routinely also recognize that this unborn individual can feel pain by that stage of life and routinely give them pain medication directly, not through mom's bloodstream, but directly to the unborn child. So there's a recognition in the medical community that these individuals feel pain.
Now, where can the listener go to actually get the scientific studies that you're citing that demonstrate that children after 20 weeks in the womb feel pain?
The best place would be go to our Charlotte Lozier Institute website, and it's Lozier Institute, LOZIER Institute.org. So LozierInstitute.org. And we have a number of things up there, obviously, because...
And where would they look once they get on the website?
You can go on the front page and right away find this written testimony on the Wisconsin bill about fetal tissue. There's subdivisions on our website called Research, which will be some of these longer pieces, the fetal pain information and so on. So you can go to that subdivision. You can...
So just look for the fetal pain subdivision.
Well, there's not one subdivision for that. It'll be under Research.
Mm-hmm.
You can type in the search box fetal pain or pain capable. We also have a blog section, which are these shorter information pieces, but also very, very rich areas for resources for the listeners. And again, you can just click on blog and browse through, or you can use the search box and type in Planned Parenthood, abortion, pain, fetal pain, any of these things.
The reason I think this is important, because if you've done as I have, and that is tried to use the Internet search engine to look up the studies on fetal pain, you'll get a lot of ideologically driven stories in New York Times and other major media that focus on the dissenters, those that you were describing earlier, who don't accept these studies as proving there's fetal pain. And I found it very hard to get at the studies that do. And I'm glad that you at Charlotte Lozier have put this someplace where people can get their hands on it, because it's an extremely important issue, especially with the Pain Capable Child Protection Act having been passed by both houses of Congress, not going to the president's desk, unfortunately, but it's a very real issue in American politics, and it should be.
It is, and it's, you know, another way to really emphasize the humanity of these unborn children. People need to be aware of that. People need to think about that. And we've tried again to collect these studies and this information in one place there on the LozierInstitute.org website, so people can find it easily.
When would you say chronologically did the studies begin to show that children in the womb feel pain? When did this start to appear in the research?
Yeah, there are some early papers that even in the 1990s were showing some of that evidence. Late 80s, definitely in the 1990s, it began to pick up pace. I've heard stories about some of the older doctors were simply told that babies existed in a sleep state or an anesthetized state. And what you found
Wouldn't mothers who are being kicked by their babies kind of laugh at that?
Of course. Moms know. Moms know that the baby's reacting to this or that, to her voice or to music or to a loud noise or to a poke. I mean, there's some common sense that's simply missing right away when you start to think about that. But then the science started to back up what moms knew all along. And now, frankly, the evidence is overwhelming. There are simply ideological blocks in some of these folks' mind that won't admit to the humanity and the pain of these unborn babies. And, you know, when we talk about that pain, then let's turn back to, I mentioned before, in terms of the fetal body parts and the Planned Parenthoods and so on, but we know that they're feeling pain, and yet you have some of these doctors that are essentially vivisecting these unborn children, talking about altering the technique to crush above or crush below certain areas of the unborn child's body so they can get more intact organs, or to use, as one doctor put it, a less crunchy technique.
Oh.
Ouch. It should just chill you. You should just have everybody should get chills just hearing that phrase. Yet, this was just kind of a nice, casual conversation, and oh yeah, if you want this or that organ, I mean, let's look at what's really going on. And
how can anybody argue with a straight face that these videos have been doctored, quote unquote? I mean, what kind of doctoring would you have done to a statement like that to have made it seem what it is, what it obviously is.
Well, and you'll notice that from Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, on down, they have not denied that those statements were made.
Well, they just say that they're edited and put in context where they are misrepresenting what really went on.
Right.
But I don't see how that would even be possible.
It can't be doctored.
A statement like that just kind of means what it means, regardless of the context.
It does. And so what you got was apologies for the tone of the doctor. Well, the words of the doctor are the ones that you really need to focus on.
Who cares about the tone?
Yeah, and it's very clear what they're talking about. Or talking about changing the presentation of the child so as to get intact calvarium. That's a nice word to say, intact heads, skulls, brains. It is horrific when you look at the actual facts of what they were doing and why they were doing it. Because, again, their target was, we want to get a nice, intact specimen so we can get a better price.
It must have been very hard for someone like you who actually knows what all these terms mean to watch these videos.
It wears on people, definitely, to see and hear this, to see an actual footage of some of these young individuals or their remains. I think people have to have their stomachs churned. I think people need to realize this is what's going on.
What have your conversations been like with those in the medical and scientific community about these videos?
The scientific community tries to distance themselves from that part of the procedure. There have been even news reports that I've seen that a number of scientists who did fetal tissue research don't want to know about that, don't want to talk about that, because they're trying to, I guess, cleanse their conscience to not think about that aspect of it. So when they get simply a piece of tissue shipped to the laboratory, they don't have to think about where that tissue came from and the horrific manner in which it was obtained.
So just pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah. And instead try and emphasize, if you can, with a straight face, all of the life-saving research.
Well, you know, it's interesting when we're talking about the scientific proof for fetal pain. I've noticed that in the debate regarding the bills in the Pain-Capable Child Protection Act, I haven't really noticed the science being challenged publicly. So it must be pretty well established.
It really is. Again, they will go back to what amounts to just a very small handful of publications where there is questionable conflict of interest and where they do not dispute the actual physiology, but instead it's this interpretation that you need higher parts of the brain for interpretation of experiencing pain, which, you know, as we've said, is ludicrous.
I'd really like to ask one of them who's making this argument whether they deny that their dog, when it's kicked, feels pain.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be an analogous question to ask?
It's an analogous question that should be asked and actually has been put out there in some of the venues where the scientists giving the accurate information and interpretation have made that analogy.
They have, I thought it was original.
That your dog or your pet hamster is feeling pain. And it's interesting to watch the folks who deny that, and that's what they are, the deniers, to try and make the case that that pain doesn't exist.
Yet they would probably be the same people who would condemn Michael Vick, right, for being involved in these dogfights. That, you know, where dogs, you know, fought to the death.
Yeah, but there's...
His life's been ruined, or basically it's been lived under a cloud ever since because he was responsible for dogs inflicting pain on each other, right?
Right. But there...
And yet Cecile Richards is, you know, Cecile Richards is living the life of Riley, flying around in first class and going to la-di-da receptions. I'm sorry I'm sounding, you know, like that, but she's a much revered figure in the Democratic Party and among many, many women.
Well, and part of that is it's all ideological. You know, they have those ideological blinders on. They're not considering the pain. They're not considering the lives ended or the lives ruined even. And again, part of it is some people, they hear the phrase Planned Parenthood, and all they have heard is women's health and mammograms, which is, we've already said.
Well, tell us about the polling you did, because you mentioned it, but you really didn't go into detail. The polling regarding the public's knowledge about what Planned Parenthood does.
Well, this is interesting that even others, but we've noticed, too, that when you just, you know, Planned Parenthood does abortions. You know, or what does Planned Parenthood do? Well, they do women's health care. They don't know. Half of the American people, and not just us, but several polls, even this summer after the videos were coming out, Planned Parenthood does women's health care. And so another aspect of our effort to get the truth out there has been to look at what other places do women's health care. It turns out there are over 13,000 community health centers that do comprehensive health care, not just reproductive services, but they don't do abortion, compared to less than 700 Planned Parenthood clinics. Now, and again, the Planned Parenthood clinics, a lot of them are doing abortions. They're not doing comprehensive health care. What they call women's health care has to do with, quotes, reproductive services. Well, these community health centers, again, over 13,000, are doing comprehensive health care. They're doing the reproductive services, but not abortion. But they're also seeing patients that have diabetes or heart problems or having well-child clinics or doing other sorts of pediatric services and on and on and on and on and on. So we've put together maps of every state in the union, showing where the Planned Parenthood clinics are, and there are a couple of dots here and there, versus these comprehensive health care clinics. And again, the maps start to get very full, very fast, so that people can realize, number one, there are alternatives to Planned Parenthood. You don't have to have your taxpayer dollars going to a group that are aborting over 300,000 lives a year.
And we're paying for half of their overhead, right, the U.S. taxpayer.
Well, we're paying, and, of course, they will claim that money doesn't go to abortion because it can't legally, yet it all goes into one big pot.
Look, if an organization even if they're doing 50% abortion, and I would imagine they're doing more than 50%, there's no way that half of their funding, $500 million, isn't supporting abortion. There's just no way. That's not the way money works. Anybody who knows anything about the way overhead works in a large business understands that, and Congress understands that.
Yes, I mean that.
They're just getting away with it. That's all it is.
This pocket or take it out of that pocket, but it's it's still in my pocket, and I'm using it for...
Yeah, I mean, if a taxpayer helps to build a building for Planned Parenthood, okay, and then abortions are done in that building, that is direct support for the abortion that's done in the building.
Yeah, I mean, there needs to be a clear line drawn, and frankly, that money should go to real health care.
Real women's health care.
Not questionable or troubling types of procedures, which is, again, why we put those maps together. Charlotte Lozier Institute with ADF has a map, and it's now interactive.
Well, tell us about that, and tell everybody what ADF is so they'll know.
Okay, the Alliance Defending Freedom are a group of pro-life lawyers, very committed, very, very busy folks out there trying to hold the line on the legal aspect. We're doing scientific and medical and social science research and trying to get that out. So we combined forces and we started looking at this whole question, because one of the cries that you would usually hear was that, well, where are women going to get care if you close Planned Parenthood? Well, they should go to this website, getyourcare.org.
Get Your Care. And what does getyourcare.org show them?
It shows them these over 13,000 clinics, comprehensive community health care clinics scattered around the nation. They can zoom in on their particular state or community, see how close their clinic is to them. They can get the contact information or the address so they can go there. A lot of these clinics actually will provide some transportation if someone is indigent or has a problem getting to the clinic. Some of these clinics will actually go out and bring you in and provide a transportation service. But again, they provide comprehensive health care, not, oh, we're gonna list, you know, here's a pamphlet on abortion and here's a pamphlet on this and here's a pamphlet on that, and we'll refer you for your mammogram and then come in and we'll do your abortion, which is what Planned Parenthood does. Now,
that's a terrific resource. That's a terrific resource. And that, of course, 13,000 centers far, far outstrips the number of Planned Parenthood clinics there are.
We actually did another just sort of calculation. So let's say you did take away Planned Parenthood's taxpayer funds, and you gave it to those community health...
The $500 million.
Yeah. How many, because they say, oh, these community health centers, oh, they couldn't possibly take in all these women. Well, even Planned Parenthood admits they only see about 2.7 million people total a year versus over 10 times that many for these comprehensive health centers. It turns out that if two more patients a week went to the community health centers, you'd completely take care of all of those displaced.
Say that again. Say that statistic one more time.
Two more women a week.
Wow.
Were to go to one of these community health centers, you
wouldn't need Planned Parenthood anymore.
You would completely absorb all of those displaced women.
Well, we're going to stop there because that's such a great point. Dr. David Prentice, we've run out of time. You've been great. And I want everybody to go to the Lozier Institute. Is it .com or .org?
.org.
.org for information on the scientific research about fetal pain. And to the getyourcare.org to show the 13,000 clinics offering comprehensive health care to women, that if these clinics receive the $500 million that go to Planned Parenthood, we wouldn't need Planned Parenthood anymore. Just two new patients a week per clinic, and Planned Parenthood is irrelevant. David, thanks for being a guest on Church and Culture.
Thank you, Neil.
Of all of you that are listening, we'll be back on this day at this time next week. Please join us.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Ave Maria Radio's upcoming conference, Cultural Madness and Catholic Sanity, is not just about the state of the world, but about the state of our souls. It's about seeking holiness and becoming the saints Christ has called us to be. When Jesus called me to himself, he called me to be conformed to his life. Likewise, St. Paul writes, to not be conformed to this world, but to be transformed through the renewing of our minds. Worldliness, or being squeezed into the mold of this world, or adopting the priorities of money, sex, and power rather than the kingdom of God, has been a constant challenge to Christians. We'll take a hard look at how American culture seduces us and how the Spirit of God has given us the resources to resist and become the saints we are called to be. So join Teresa Tomeo and me on October 17th for Cultural Madness, Catholic Sanity, Living and Loving Without Illusion in the Next America. Information is at AveMariaRadio.net.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We're told that money can't buy happiness, and that's largely true. But new research from the Harvard Business School shows that what we do spend our money on can actually boost how happy we feel. It turns out spending money on ourselves or buying things, even fun things, doesn't really do much to make us happier. But when we use our money to invest in others, by giving to a charity, helping a stranger, or even buying our friend lunch, we experience a lift. Our Catholic faith tells us that we're stewards of the gifts God's given us, and that being a good steward means sharing what we have. I guess it shouldn't come as too big a surprise to know that when we follow God's will for our lives and our money, he gives us the grace to be happier. Would you like to be happier today? Find someone you can invest in and be generous. You'll be happy you did. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
How important is money to you? Today we hear the Bible on money. It's from the Book of Wisdom. I prayed and wisdom came to me. I preferred her to scepter and throne, and deemed riches nothing in comparison with her. So wisdom is more important than riches. What should we think about money? Well, wisdom is much more important. The Gospel gives the same teaching. One day a man asked Jesus, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said, "Keep the commandments." So he replied, "I've observed them from my youth." And Jesus, loving him, said, "You're lacking one thing. Go sell what you have and give to the poor. Then come, follow me." At that his face fell and he went away sad, for he had many possessions. Jesus then said to his disciples, "How hard it is for those who have wealth to enter the kingdom of God." That amazed them, so he repeated it. "How hard it is to enter the kingdom of God. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for one who's rich to enter the kingdom of God." They were so surprised, they asked, "Then who can be saved?" And Jesus looked at them and said, "For human beings it's impossible, but not for God. All things are possible for God." Our society is very business money oriented. Has it corrupted?